"Oh, I never liked that Barbara anyway." And you're like, "Really? Because you've been like talking to her on the phone at least one time a week for the last 25 years."
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello and welcome to The Alzheimer's Podcast, episode 36. I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. As always, I'd like to thank you for joining me for another episode where my goal is always to empower you to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. If you've listened to recent episodes, then you're familiar with Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa. She is a regular guest here on the Alzheimer's Podcast. She recently wrote in one of her articles, "Sometimes it's really obvious something is off and requires intervention. Other times, we notice things are unusual, but we aren't sure if we should be alarmed and do something, or chill out and let it go." As you probably know, that is a very common feeling, one you might have on a daily basis depending on your situation. So I'm excited to say this episode kicks off a six-part series with Christy where we will discuss five main areas to look at with objective signs that indicate a problem requires intervention. Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, is a certified dementia practitioner, certified dementia care unit manager, and cognitive stimulation instructor. She has run award-winning memory care communities and assisted living and skilled nursing levels of care. Using her 16 years of experience in working with over 1,100 people living with dementia and their families, she's developed a system that helps families move from crisis management to confidence. Hello, Christy. Welcome back to the Alzheimer's Podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
So, Christy, today we're going to talk about knowing when it's time to intervene or get help. And on your site at DementiaSherpa.com, you lay out five main areas to look at with objective signs that indicate a problem. So why is it important for care partners to understand these five main areas and the associated signs?
Well, I think number one, safety. That's where I always want to start. That's one really important reason to understand it. But the other thing is that as care partners, we have to remember, you know, care partner may be the label we have in this situation, but we're humans first and foremost. And that means that our brains like to play tricks on us too. And we like try to talk ourselves out of seeing what we're seeing because we know that that could mean something bad and that's painful.
Yep.
And so our brains are like, nope, don't look at that. Don't go down that neighborhood. Turn around, U-turn.
So much easier to avoid than to take it on.
In the moment it is, but it ends up like with anything else that we need to tend to, that we put off, it becomes more difficult and more complicated and typically more painful to deal with it later than to deal with it right now. So, and the other thing too is that other people in the family can echo that. They can turn into an ugly echo chamber. So you're trying to talk yourself out of seeing what you're seeing. And you mention it maybe to, you know, a sibling and they're like, I'm not seeing any of that. You're just making it up. Or, oh, are you being a drama queen? And again, you end up with the bad results. So these are just objective signs. You don't have to take anybody else's opinion, you know, or weight that. They're just objective signs that this is something that needs some attention.
And I think it's great for our care partners and our listeners to have a professional such as yourself lay those out so that they can, you know, look at that and know, okay, Christy's telling me that this is something I should be thinking about or concerned about and observing and taking action on.
Yeah. And some of these, you know, are, I feel like probably everybody is like, well, yeah, duh. But some of them aren't. Some of them are things you might not necessarily think of. So that's another thing I like about this list.
Do you want to share from the list? Because I know over the next five episodes, we're going to dive deep into the five categories.
Yeah, I'll just give an overview.
Okay.
So five main categories that we're looking at. And again, that's because, you know, I say dementia, typically people think memory loss, which is definitely a big part of it, but it affects all different areas of the brain. So one of the areas that we're looking at is safety awareness and judgment. Specifically, is somebody's safety awareness diminished? Is their judgment impaired? Home environment. You can notice a lot of changes in the home environment, and that's probably for most people, those are the first indicators there in that home environment, and those are most often overlooked. Behavioral changes is often next to memory loss. Behavioral changes are what people typically focus on most. And if we're talking about frontotemporal dementia, for example, then behavioral changes would be a big sign there. But if we're talking about, let's say, Alzheimer's disease, these behavioral changes are typically going to happen later in the process. So this can give you kind of an indication of maybe things to mention to the doctor when getting a diagnosis that will help the doctor kind of start eliminating, because that's how different types of dementia are diagnosed, is according to, it's a process of elimination, right? So, or a diagnosis of exclusion. So we're trying to figure out what it's not before we get to that final actual diagnosis. And then also physical changes. And again, that's another one that's really overlooked, that people don't necessarily think that that has anything to do with dementia, but it very often does. And then finally, cognitive changes. And those are typically what people think of when we're talking about people living with dementia. But cognitive changes, again, is about more than memory loss. There's a lot of other things that are going on too, because it's more accurate when we say dementia, more accurate to think of, you know, a brain being under attack rather than just memory loss.
From what I'm hearing, you know, it really all starts with just good observation and knowing your loved one and knowing how they've done, how they've behaved or done things over the life that you've known them and how they're doing things now, and noticing, seeing those changes and then being aware that that could be because of something dementia related.
Right. For example, my mom is a total sweetheart. She's so nice that people would often say to me, "Oh my gosh, your mom is so nice. You must take after your dad."
You? Really?
And, yeah. And my mom is just, she is, she's a total sweetheart. My dad had a temper. My mom, not so much. And I've been the ever-increasing target of my mom's ever-increasing temper over the last couple of years. And things have finally gotten to a point where I realized that there's a problem. And that is one of those signs where you might not necessarily be thinking, again, if you're thinking dementia equals memory loss and that's all you're looking at, you know, then another part of your brain's going, well, gosh, my mom's really being a jerk. but they're related. So, yeah, the anger, the increasing frequency of it, and the intensity of it, those are signs that I'm experiencing right now in my own life. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's important to kind of look at a lot of different things.
When she was diagnosed with dementia, were you living nearby her at the time? Were you able to see these changes on a daily basis?
As of right now, when we're recording this, my mom has not been diagnosed yet.
Oh, okay.
She lives 700 miles away from me. And my brother and I are kind of going through a thing. So people who subscribe to the newsletter have a little bit more awareness of what's going on because I've written about it. But yeah, I will say that I always say I understand this both as a professional because I've worked with about 1,200 people professionally. And I also understand it as a family member because I've been through it seven times as a family member. But right now I am in the midst of going through it the eighth time as a family member. And I have a big heart for everybody who's at this stage right now too, where you need to be very delicate in how you handle things, or you end up creating a situation where you're not going to be able to effectively intervene. Because most people don't like to admit that they have a problem, no matter what the problem is, right? And they especially don't like to be told by somebody else that they have a problem. So that's kind of the line that we're walking right now.
So maybe we can give a little teaser for each of the five categories, and then knowing that in follow-up episodes, we're going to dive deeper. But for for diminished safety, awareness, and judgment, what is probably one of the most common things that families see first?
I would say usually driving, actually.
Okay.
That's, you know, go, that I don't remember that scratch being on the car, or that's weird, the trash can's knocked over, or, you know, things like that. And so, again, it's those, you know, oh, that, is that really a big deal? I don't want to make really developed a driving quiz for families to just say, okay, again, objectively, you know, you can take the quiz. Here's the scoring. Have somebody else in your family do it too. And now you know, is it time that, you know, is this really a problem? Do you need to intervene or not? But driving is one of those things. And another thing is letting people into the house that shouldn't be coming into the house. And the funny thing is, when I work with private clients and go to do an assessment, usually the family will say, oh, Christy, they'll never let you in the house. And I just go, I promise you, I will get in the house, and you will be horrified when I tell you later about how easy it was for me to get in the house.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And that's just the way it goes. So,
and I know you say that because you have that positive energy you bring in, and kids will be like, maybe they'll say, well, these guys that come to the home aren't going to have that energy, but con men can really fake. They can really,
exactly,
and they can pretend to be someone they're not, right? So,
absolutely, and that's what makes them so effective. If con men came to the door like scary guy with all that, you know, people wouldn't let him in. Of course not. They'd be like, "Oh, that's scary." Yeah, so that's a very good point.
And unfortunately, as more and more people become aware of what Alzheimer's and dementia really is, the bad people are going to, unfortunately, utilize that to their, in their favor. And and I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm starting to see it more in the spam I get. I'm starting to see things targeted at Alzheimer's and dementia. And I know it's not just because I have a website. It's because it's on my personal email, you know, somewhere else. So,
yes, me too. Absolutely.
The driving thing, I'm definitely not surprised to hear. And I know it, that's always one of the toughest things. And every state has every state has different laws, right? Some states, like California, I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe here, once you're diagnosed, they automatically take your license. Other states, you can still keep taking a driver's test. And as long as you do well, they still let you drive.
Right. And here's the other thing, is we're talking about in every state, humans are involved. Okay.
Right.
So, for example, here in Oregon, a doctor is a mandatory reporter. They're supposed to notify DMV. Does that mean they always do? Nope.
Right.
It does not. And so, and also here in Oregon, people can keep testing as many times as they want. And here's the funny thing. Families who are desperate to get these keys away from them say, well, yeah, they got the notification from the DMV, and now I have to take time off work to take dad down there so he can test it. I go, wait, this is part of the test. They got the notification from DMV. This is not the time for you to intervene. This is the time for you to back up.
That's
right?
Good point.
So what is your dad going to do? How is he going to make that appointment? How is he going to get there? How is he going to study for it? You know, and family's like, oh, and the funny thing is, it's because the families don't really, like any care partner, never gives himself or herself enough credit for how much support they're actually providing.
True.
And that's another example of it.
And they don't want to be the bad guy and be the one that has to take away the keys.
Right.
And I know you talk about how to pull this off while still being liked.
Yeah, I think that's important, you know, and if you can ever put a target on a professional's back, that is absolutely the way to go. Usually we always just say, you know, throw the doctor under the bus, because, typically people see the doctor for 15 minutes, like every 3 months, if something serious is going on, maybe every 6 months, annually. So yeah. And every driving situation, I'll always have, you know, the person living with dementia tell me later, you know, that, you know, filthy low-down snake of a, you know, doctor, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And that, you know, son of a biscuit eater, I don't know what he's thinking. And he got his law degree from Mickey Mouse University or whatever. And just like, just all this vitriol, right?
Right, right.
And again, families can get upset about that. I'm like, he's so upset about that. I'm like, uh-huh. And notice who the target is. It's not you.
Right.
It's the doctor. So yay. So people are still, of course, entitled to their opinions. Dementia is definitely not a cure for emotions, right? So they're going to have opinions about the doctor. They're going to feel, you know, vehemently that the doctor's an idiot, and they're going to target the doctor for their anger. And that's great, because that means you still are in a position to be an effective advocate, to be an effective helper, to have a good relationship with your parent or partner, because you're not the bad guy.
The old common enemy routine.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the other thing, you know, when somebody starts really going off about what an idiot the doctor is, you go, yeah, you know what? If the doctor said that to me, I'd be furious too. Because you would, right?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. So what's the common or first thing people might see from changes in the home environment that should lead us to an intervention or getting help?
This is just pretty easy. It's usually visual cues. So you pull up outside your parents' home, the yard doesn't look the way that it should. Things are overgrown, unkempt. The trash cans don't seem to ever make it back up to, you know, away from the curb. The just little things, like, you know, show up with an eye toward, if I were selling this house, what would need to be done? And kind of mentally go through that checklist of how long has it been since any type of home maintenance was done? If any utilities are turned off, dishes in the sink, dirty laundry, all of those types of things,
right,
are big indicators. Then also look at, what's the junk mail situation? What's the mail situation, right? So if there is a pile of mail, that is a problem. The reason why is there are probably utility bills in there that are being ignored. And it's not because somebody is willfully ignoring them. It's because just getting a stack of mail every day has started to become too much to manage. Classically too, all of the junk mail that arrives, people can order things
out of
catalogs and the Parade magazine and the Sunday paper and that kind of stuff. So are you noticing, like, you know, another bad sign is, you know, 5 boxes from Amazon or Franklin Mint or whatever.
The shopping
QVC,
club.
Yeah. Right, exactly. There needs to be a reasonable explanation for that kind of stuff.
So one thing I'd like to just mention is that everything you've touched on is also not just exclusive to someone that might have dementia. We, as a society and community and friends and neighbors, need to think about this stuff just for any older adult that may be at risk for becoming isolated and going through those lonely times of their life.
Right. So there are definitely older adults who are able to still live independently in the community because of the support of neighbors or their church family, or, you know, maybe they do have one adult child who is able to come visit, but not that often. And so it is a good idea to keep your eye out and see what's going on, because it may not be a sign of cognitive impairment. It may be a sign of some type of physical disability or just lack of strength, right? So somebody has been meaning to bring in the trash can, but, you know, maybe it's a little bit icy and they're afraid of falling, and so they let it go. Those types of things. So yeah, if you can lend a hand, great.
The third main area that we talked about, and you've already gave us an example of, was behavior and personality changes.
Right.
So beyond changes in, like, demeanor and temper, are there any other common ones that typically occur?
You know, look for, all of a sudden, is somebody, like, depressed? Or are they suddenly saying no right? A lot. Like, you know that they've been totally into the monthly potluck after church for, you know, the last 30, 45 years, whatever it is. And now they're just like, no.
Right.
Is it because they need help preparing a dish, or is it because there are too many people? So saying no to things that they used to enjoy is one of those signs that's often overlooked, because we're not necessarily tuned into the fact that social situations become overwhelming for people who are experiencing cognitive loss. And also, you know, not always, but hearing loss is very highly correlated with dementia. So there could be hearing loss happening as well as some cognitive loss. And then it's like, who are these people again? And nobody likes to look dumb in front of other people. And for people who are experiencing this, right, they're experiencing cognitive changes, they may not be able to say, I'm not comfortable in social situations because I can't hear very well and I don't always remember who's around me. They're not going to verbalize it that way, but they can say to you, like, oh, I never liked that Barbara anyway. And you're like, really? Because you've been like talking to her on the phone at least one time a week for the last 25 years. Interesting. So those types of changes, right? Or like, oh, those church people are a bunch of whatevers. Nope, that's not, you know, so just kind of look for those subtle changes, because that withdrawal is a self-protection mechanism. Very common. So that's a good thing to look for.
Okay, sounds good. And area number four is physical changes, and and hearing kind of falls in there. But what might be other examples of that?
Somebody's just not sleeping in the same way that they used to. This was, again, another thing that I witnessed one of the last times I visited my mom, that there might be more doctor's appointments or emergency room trips, or you know, just it's again, when you kind of look at it as a group, like, hey, this just doesn't seem right. Like there's just, you know, like grandma's lost a bunch of weight, or dad's gained a bunch of weight, or grandpa's falling a lot. And typically we think of a fall as the problem, but almost always the fall is a symptom of whatever other thing is going on. So that could be, you know, problems with balance, with gait, with blood pressure, lots of things, but they all indicate a need that, you know, it's time for a doctor appointment. That would be a wise move. And, you know, just more urinary tract infections.
Okay.
I think all of our listeners on this podcast no doubt know that urinary tract infections causes changes in behavior and personality, right? But, you know, most people don't know that in older adults, a urinary tract infection, that's how you know, is a change in personality and behavior, versus somebody saying, oh my gosh, it burns when I pee, or I'm in so much pain because of the spasms in my bladder. People living with dementia almost never complain of those things.
Hmm. So Christy, the fifth area that we want to think about when we're trying to determine if it's time to intervene or get help are cognitive changes.
Right. And this is usually where people think memory loss. Aha. But it's more than that. So think about the inability to do familiar things like a load of laundry. This goes back to changes you might notice in the home environment, right? Or somebody's having a conversation with you and they can't think of a word. And it's within the context of the story. And again, I'll use a conversation that I had with my mom that I've written about. She was talking about going to a doctor's appointment, and she mentioned the special table that reclines.
Oh, no.
And I was like, the exam table? She goes, yeah. And so just little subtle things like that, or somebody just really, like you're having a conversation with them and all of a sudden they get a blank look, or, you know, where they go, oh, I'm sorry, I was daydreaming, or, you know, just like where you can tell that they're kind of struggling. So that just a lot of times shows up in language, either with word finding difficulty or calling something by the wrong name, or, you know, sometimes people will say, instead of referring to something specifically or by name, they'll say, oh, you know, that outfit down the street, or the, you know, oh, you know, the place, the joint, those types of things are also signs.
I see. So I am looking forward to diving into these five areas with you over the next five episodes. So that's going to be fun.
Me too.
And, but I want to thank you, Christy, for joining us today and introducing us to these five main areas to look at so our care partners know that it's time to intervene and get help. Be sure to subscribe and check back next week where we will dive deeper into signs of diminished safety awareness and judgment. Thanks again, Christy, for joining us, and thank you to our listeners. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.